Topic of our Dhamma talk Khatnya this evening is effort part 2. And Satnas of this Dhamma talk Khatnya will follow the talk given on effort on last Satnya Tuesday. Now, you might Satnya remember at the beginning of Satnya that Satnya first Dhamma talk on effort, that illustration or an illustration was certainly given for the nature of effort, namely a situation where one lives certainly in a nice house near at a big lake, and behind the house there's a big forest, and then a fire sets in, and it's a big forest fire, and one has nothing left, there's no other option but to swim across the lake in order to get away from the fire. And so one then picks up a makeshift raft, and then lying on it paddles continuously across the lake. So this going from the dangerous side of the lake to the safe side of the lake with the help of a raft or float is can be seen or is an illustration for the nature of effort. And certainly it is effort, continuous, well-balanced effort that is very much needed to leave behind the dangerous shore and to cross over to the safe shore. Now, various definitions, Dhamma Sanghanit definitions for effort were given. The classical Visuddhimagga definition was also given. Maybe to just briefly recall this, namely, its effort's characteristic is that of a patient's endurance in the face of difficulty. And its function is to support the associated mental states, and it is manifested as non-collapse. And then a sense of urgency is given as one proximate cause for the arising of effort, and the other one being anything that steers one into action. Now, we then also looked at how we might be experiencing effort certainly in the practice itself, so situations where effort is certainly required, and then some general features of effort were explained. Now, today we shall continue, continue where we left off on Tuesday. The importance of effort can be fathomed by the fact, or from the fact, that effort appears in the Buddha's teachings in the context of quite a number of different sets of teachings. Could you think of some? Effort being part of, pardon me? The Idipa. But, okay, yes. Anything else?
Faculties.
What then?
Faculties.
The five faculties, yes. And then we might as well add the five powers, the pancha balani, and then
right effort.
Right effort as part of the Eightfold Noble Path. path. There you go. And Satna, then, very important for the attainment of Satna, the Dhamma, are your enlightenment factors, and effort is part or not part of those. It is. So it's Satna, the third Satna enlightenment, Satna factor. So in a number of Satna, really relevant groups of Satna teachings, effort appears as Satna, one major factor. Now, Jim mentioned Satna, right, effort, samavayama, as one factor of Satna, the Eightfold Satna, Noble Path, and Satna there, effort gets Satna further defined as Satna, the four supreme efforts. And Satna, or the four supreme exertions. And briefly stated, the first one is Satna, the effort to avoid unwholesome states, but more thoroughly stated, this is Satna, the effort to avoid unarisen, unwholesome states from arising. So it's it's the first line of defense, so to speak, not to allow unwholesome states to arise in the first place. Now, secondly, we have the effort made to dispel or overcome unwholesome mental states that have arisen for this or that Satna reason. Then, as Satna number three, we have Satna, the effort to develop wholesome states that have arisen. And finally, there's the effort to maintain those wholesome states, Satna, that are present. Now, to express Satna, all of this in greater detail, namely, following the Anguttara Nikaya, its fourth volume, discourse number 13, describes the first type of effort as a disciple rouses his or her will to avoid the arising of unwholesome states that have not yet arisen, and one makes an effort to stir up one's satna energy, one exerts one's mind, and satna strives. Now, this satna then, in the following discourse in the Anguttara Nikaya, gets specified satna further, namely by stating that one engages in this effort to avoid by restraining one's satna, unguarded satna senses, and satna thus avoids unwholesomeness from arising. This form, this first form of effort, is known as samvara padana in the Pali scriptural language. Now, on occasion, it certainly might happen that owing to a temporary lapse in one's satna mindfulness, or owing to some distraction, whatever it might certainly be, some unwholesome mental state arises. So it's there in the mind, one can't help it, and satna then one just has to deal with this unwholesome state. So for this particular situation, the recommendation is to overcome the unwholesome state that has already arisen, to overcome or to abandon. Now, again, to quote Satna from that 13th discourse from the Anguttara Nikaya, herein a retreatant rouses one's Satna will to overcome the unwholesome states that have already arisen, and one makes Satna effort, stirs up one's energy, exerts one's mind, and strives. Now, in this connection, allow me to expand a little bit. Sometimes what certainly happens in our practice, and certainly this is based on interviews with certain yogis, a certain unwholesome mental state arises, and one simply allows it to arise. So let's say a fantasy has arisen in the mind, and suddenly then, rather than really being mindful of it, one simply just allows it to well proliferate. And suddenly this thing can have all sorts of fitting consequences. That would be a case for not engaging, not applying the second Nisama Padana. And so not suddenly rousing one's will to overcome the unwholesome state. The same thing could be said in the case of the arising of anger, of sloth and torpor, of restlessness and remorse, and skeptical doubt. So let's say in the case of skeptical doubt arises. One is aware that skeptical doubt is there, but somewhere or other one just, oh, never mind, just let it go on, and one tolerates it. And then sooner or later, in no time, that skeptical doubt then gets out of control. Now, the 14th discourse of the Anguttara Nikaya describes the second form of right effort as follows. One does not retain any thought of sensual lust or any other unwholesome states that may have arisen. One abandons certain of them, dispels them, destroys them, causes them to disappear. This is called the effort to overcome Pahana Padana in the Pali scriptural language. Now, as for the third form of effort, this is to arouse unarisen wholesome states. And so one rouses one's will to arouse certain wholesome states that have not yet certainly arisen, and one makes certain effort, steers up one's energy, exerts one's mind, and certainly strives. Now, unarisen wholesome states could be states of generosity, could be states of virtue, or that certainly finally one makes up one's mind to engage in the development of the mind, namely bhavana in the Pali scriptural language, or one makes an effort to radiate loving kindness, to develop compassion towards suffering beings, and so on and so forth. So it's in that certain sense. Now, this form of Samapadana is known as Bhavana Padana in the Pali scriptural language, and Satna discourse number 14 from that same Anguttara Nikaya then adds Satna one more detail, namely bringing, and this Satna would be then applicable to later stages in one's Satna meditation practice, bringing about the factors of enlightenment if they have not Satna yet arisen. So, the enlightenment factor of mindfulness, of investigation of states, of effort, and satna, then of joy, of tranquility, concentration, and satna equanimity. Now, once wholesome states have arisen, or so far unarisen, wholesome states have arisen, then what is certainly finally required is to maintain those certain states, and that's certainly the function of the fourth Samadhipadana. In the Pali scripture language known as Anurakana Padana, so one rouses one's certain will to maintain those wholesome states that have already arisen, and not to allow them to disappear, but certain, in addition even, to bring them to growth, to maturity, and to the full perfection of development. And one makes efforts, stirs up one's energy, exerts one's mind, and strives in that certain direction. So those four Samadhipadanas then are tantamount certainly to the noble path factor of right effort, Samadhipadana. Now, among the groups of teachings that do contain effort, we have the five controlling faculties, the pancha indriyani in the Pali scripture language, and out of those, the second one being effort, the first one is faith, the third one is mindfulness, followed by concentration, and lastly intuitive wisdom. And the Samyutta Nikaya in the 48th Samyutta, namely Discourse Satnet number 9, then explains Satna this in very simple ways, namely, energy is aroused for the abandoning of unwholesome states and for the acquisition or the gaining of wholesome states. And in this regard, one is strong. Tamawa in Pali, which is an expression for effort, firm in exertion, dalha parakamo, yet another expression for effort, and then not shirking one's responsibility of cultivating wholesome states, anikita, durata in the Pali scriptural language, yet another term for effort. Now, in the context of the seven enlightenment factors, we find that those in practice arise more or less one after another in a sequential manner. One, suddenly they've all arisen in the stream of consciousness, then they will be all present, and suddenly the next step is suddenly to strengthen them and strengthen them further, and suddenly to gradually bring all of them into balance. Now, these enlightenment factors do not suddenly arise in a haphazard manner, but suddenly rather one is based on the previous or even several previous enlightenment factors. So, one, it all starts by mindfully attending to whatever predominant object arises in one's practice, and suddenly with this thing, one starts to discern some of an object's suddenly features. one, not just one object, but several objects, and that satna then fires one satna energy, and with that then the enlightenment factor of satna effort arises, and satna will be present. And that satna in turn, then as the energy increases, will lead satna to some joy. One realizes, oh, the practice is really working. The joy will at first be somewhat coarse, gradually becomes more refined, and satna then paves the way for the arising of tranquility. And that satna tranquility then in turn paves satna the way for the arising of concentration. And once the mind satna is concentrated, then with equanimity one looks on to formations. With a concentrated and balanced mind, one looks at satna formations. Now, we find a somewhat similar set of factors that nicely describe what is actually happening in our meditation practice in the context of the so-called ten imperfections of insight, dasa, vipassana, upakilesa in the Pali scriptural language. In terms of clarification of the term, those are imperfections only if one makes the mistake to get attached to them, or develop craving, pride and conceit, and wrong view to them. Now, the first one of those imperfections of insight is, which one? Who knows? Illumination. Obasa in the Pali scriptural language, followed by a sharpened, unerring knowledge. This in turn is satna, followed by joy, followed by tranquility, happiness or contentment, and satna then the arising of faith. And what follows then? Then. So, you, based on all these wonderful experiences, so just imagine yourself sitting there and then having various illumination experiences. You see bright lights and flickering lights and whatnot, maybe even different colors. And then the mind is so sharp and it discerns some things really clearly. Joy is there, tranquility is present, contentment is also there. Naturally, faith will arise. My goodness, the practice is really working. And satna, so with satna, much faith, then more energy is available, becomes available. And so then you're really ready to do the practice even more so. So, a somewhat satna similar sequence similar to the one as mentioned in the context of satna, the enlightenment satna factors. Now, the Bhojanga Samyutta, namely the collection of discourses on the enlightenment factors, speaks of an antithesis, if you like to, or contrast between the enlightenment factor of effort and the hindrance of satna sloth and satna torpor. And so it is with this enlightenment factor of effort or energy that satna we can then overcome its direct opposite, which comes in the form of satna sloth and torpor. Now, effort is satna mentioned also in the context of a discourse or group of satna factors known as satna, the pancha indriyani. Padaniyangani in the Pali scripture language, sorry. And so those are your five limbs of striving, or your five factors of fitness striving. Now, the first one of fatna, those is faith, and satna, the second satna one is being free from illness and affliction, meaning that one has a good digestion that is neither too cool nor too warm, but just satna right. And the third limb of fatna striving is and given as being honest and certainly sincere, an important certain quality. And then, as certainly number four, and this interests us the most, is one is energetic in abandoning unwholesome states and in undertaking wholesome states. One is steadfast, launching one's effort with firmness and certain persevering in cultivating wholesome states. Now, the last factor is certainly given being wise and having noble wisdom with regard to seeing the arising and satna dissolution of formations. And it is satna said, anyone who possesses satna these five satna factors, and the fifth one is actually a resultant of the previous satna four, will sooner or later attain the state of arahant satnaship. So do notice that satna effort is satna one of these satna five factors. Now, a major emphasis of fatna this talk will be on the development of fatna effort. So, for situations when effort is not present, what do we need to do to bring about satna, its satna arising? Now, quite a number of fatna things can be done. And allow me to share with you passages from various satna discourses, various suttas that speak just about satna this. Now, the first one is satna, the so-called Chanki Sutta from the Majjhima Nikaya, namely its second volume, section 173. And it's a lengthy discourse. It describes an encounter between a young Brahmin by the name of Chanki, who happens to be very versed in the Vedic scriptures and then in grammar and not. And so one day the Buddha and his a large retinue of disciples then decides to reside in a nearby grove. And then the villagers, as well as satna the Brahmin Chanki, together go and satna visit this illustrious satna visitor. And then the young Brahmin engages the Buddha in a discussion, and eventually the discussion is about how to figure out whether a spiritual person is indeed a valid satna teacher or not. And the Buddha recommends that the young, or that one would or should carefully observe that person, that bhikkhus or spiritual teacher's behavior, whether in bodily action or in verbal action, displays any kind of conduct that is based in greed, or whether the conduct is not based in greed. Then the same thing goes for hatred, the same thing goes for delusion. Now comes the important part. Now, and I'll quote the second volume of the Majjhima Nikaya, section 173. The Buddha then further advises this young Brahmin, Chanki, when one has investigated such a spiritual person and has seen that he or she is purified from states of greed, hatred, and delusion, then one places faith in him or her. Filled with faith, one visits the person and pays respect to him or her. Having paid respect to the spiritual person, one gives ear, one lends an ear. When one gives ear, one hears the correct Dhamma. Having heard the Dhamma, one memorizes and examines the meaning of the teachings one has memorized. When one examines their meaning, one gains a reflective or just a conceptual acceptance of those teachings. When one has gained a reflective acceptance of those teachings, zeal springs up. And when zeal has sprung up, one applies one's will, which is a form of early effort. Having applied one's will, one scrutinizes. Having scrutinized, one strives. Paddhahati in the Pali scriptural language, which is yet another term for exerting effort. Resolutely striving, one realizes with the body, and here is meant the mental body, the supreme truth, and suddenly sees it by penetrating it with wisdom. So in other words, one penetrates it with noble insights, with noble path knowledge. So, in this particular passage, effort, exertion is mentioned in the context of coming into contact with a spiritual person, carefully investigating that certain person, and certainly then developing some faith, and so on and so forth. Now, this could be with regard to a living spiritual teacher, but it could also be with regard to the Buddha as the teacher who's given profound teachings. Now, if faith has arisen in the Dhamma, then this prepares the ground for quite a number of opportunities later on. Now, either in conjunction with what has been described in the Chanki Sutta, or somewhat separately, one might then also develop a sense of urgency, and that certain sense of urgency then might certainly lead a retreatant to experience a strong desire to practice, and certainly that desire to practice then in turn will lead to the arising of effort, of course. Now, in an earlier talk, Marcia has certainly spoken about some weaker sense of urgency. So that sense of urgency, again, may is a fundamental factor, and may then set in motion a whole sequence of steps that ultimately might lead a person to the realization of the Dhamma. Now, you might certainly remember from the previous Satna Dhamma talk that Satna effort, virya, is Satna what? A wholesome mental state, an unwholesome mental state, or one of the universals, or?
Occasional.
It's one of the occasionals. It's an ethically variable mental state, one of those pakinakas. So, as Sutton explained during that Sutton earlier talk on that effort, or a burglar will need to exert effort to break into a house and then make off with some valuable property. And a meditator who strives towards Nibbana will also need effort. But is certainly the effort of the same nature? Obviously not. So we do need to ensure that the effort that certainly is present or that arises in the context of our endeavor is a wholesome effort. And one way of assuring this is to be firmly based in sila. Now, there's a short but certainly interesting discourse in the Samyutta Nikaya in this context, namely volume 5, section 246. It's entitled Strenuous. Bhikkhus, bhikkhunis, and lay retreatants, just as whatever strenuous deeds are all done based upon the earth, established on the earth, so too, based upon virtue, established upon virtue or moral conduct, a retreatant develops and cultivates the four right strivings. So that is, if you like, a sine qua non. It's an condition that absolutely needs to be present. Without this condition, things will not work. Now, so we have investigated a spiritual person, someone who teaches Satna Dhamma, and Satna then find that Satna person is, or his or her conduct is based in non-greed, non-hatred, non-delusion, or at least to some extent, and Satna then out of a sense of urgency, a strong desire to practice is there. This leads on to the arising of effort. Now, so far, is so good. And our effort is based in sila, as mentioned. However, there could be certain circumstances that certainly would lead to an obstruction of the arising of effort. Can you think of one or two such factors? What could certainly then obstruct certainly the arising of your effort?
Mm-hmm.
or obstruct the present effort. Well, you have any idea?
Sleeping in high, cozy, luxurious beds.
Well, that certainly would be a way, yeah, sure. And certainly, what certainly sort of laziness, and certainly, what the Chetukila Sutta, the discourse on the wildernesses in the heart, or of the heart, suggests is a fourfold form of doubt. Namely, doubt in the Buddha, doubt in the Dhamma, doubt in the Sangha, and doubt in the training. Now, when a tremendous amount of doubt is there, your mind is filled with doubting thoughts about everything, now then, will it be easy to apply yourself to the practice? Let's say when you have thoughts about leaving, you're just about to pack your things and go. At that point, you're not too interested in exerting effort anymore. So that's going to be the point when you'll back off. Now, not only can doubt be a major obstruction or major hindrance or wilderness in the heart, so to speak, but as the Chetukila Sutta suggests, anger, especially with regard to one's fellow retreatants, fellow spiritual practitioners, this too will then impede your effort and certainly your meditative striving. So if we have some good effort going, then to just keep a watchful eye on it and to make sure that this effort does not get weakened through the arising of doubt and anger. Now, having come this far, we're probably pretty motivated to do the practice, but at times, especially at the beginning of a retreat, we might find that still we are overcome by sloth and torpor. And so, this could be during the last sitting of the day, or it could be the very first sitting of the day, or after a meal, breakfast, or lunch. Now, there's certainly the Chankama Sutta, the discourse on walking meditation, that gives us some good advice, again, in connection with effort. And it says, it speaks of five benefits of walking meditation and striving, in other words, certain exerting effort is one of those benefits. It's the second benefit. So the first one is that it's certainly said to, walking meditation is said to be good to prepare oneself for an extended journey. And the second benefit is certainly that it is good for striving or to build a good stamina for the practice of mindfulness itself. Now, the Venerable Nisadupanita Biwamsa of Burma explains this particular point as follows, from a practical point of view. Namely, he says that in walking meditation, not only do we need the physical effort to keep the body upright and to keep the body moving, but we also need the mental effort to be mindful of whatever predominant object arises while we're lifting the foot, while the foot is moving forward, and while it's being lowered and placed. So if on occasion we suffer from intense sloth and torpor, then walking meditation could be used to deal with the situation. If early in the morning you wake up and you feel somewhat groggy, your sleep wasn't too good, and you have a hard time getting going, in this kind of a situation, it would definitely make a lot of sense to do some walking meditation, and that then will help to get both the physical as well as the mental system going. Now, in the connection of developing, bringing about and developing effort, there's yet another discourse that we could refer to. And that gives us some insight, some idea of how to proceed. Namely, the so-called Ratapala Sutta from the Majjhima Nikaya, the discourse on the elder Ratapala. Again, a pretty lengthy discourse. It's about an encounter between King Kauravya and then this elder Ratapala, and the king knows Ratapala. He used to be a citizen of the town where the capital of the kingdom was. And the king also knew him as a young man from an affluent family, or with an affluent family background, and also knowing him to be a very healthy person. So one day, this Ratapala, elder Ratapala, shows up in the garden of the king. This event then gets reported to the king. He immediately decides to go and visit Ratapala, and getting to the garden, the royal garden, then meets with elder Ratapala. Recognizing who this monastic is, he then as is obviously very surprised. How come this young, previously young man from the village, how come that he ended up becoming a monastic? And so he asks him four questions, namely, what kind of a loss have you decided to become a monastic? And he then specifies this further, namely the loss of loss occurring through aging, loss occurring through sickness, loss occurring through or as number three, loss of wealth, and Satnir then number four, loss of relatives. So he asks Satnir and Elder Ratapana, is it that upon these four kinds of losses that you have become a monastic? And Elder Ratapana answers Satnir him that this is not the case. And instead he states that having heard a discourse of the Buddha on the four essences, the so-called Dhammodesa in the Pali scriptural language, that he then decided to first of all ordain, and then he decided to meditate, and ultimately he even realized the Dhamma. Now, the first essence of Fatna, the Dhamma, is known: life in any world is unstable. Now, the explanation here is that all of us, whether we like it or not, our life is swept towards aging and death. We're not getting younger. Second by second, we are growing older. So it is because Elder Ratapada heard the Buddha speak of this first essence of the Dhamma that suddenly he was suddenly strongly moved, and suddenly then wanted to, or that he then ordained. And secondly, because of the second essence of the Dhamma, being alive in any world has no shelter and no protector. Meaning that if we are seriously ill, then neither our parents nor any of our friends or acquaintances will be able to take a share of that pain and make us suffer less. We will have to face up fully to the pain, to illness, or whatever it might be. So there's no one who can protect us, no shelter. Now, obviously, apart from the Dhamma. Now, the third essence of the Dhamma is life in any world has nothing of its own. One has to leave all and pass on according to one's actions. Elder Ratapana explains this certainly to the king in the following ways, namely, stating that the king has certainly surely big deposits or big vaults of gold and silver and money and certainly keeping valuable properties here and certainly there. But when the time of death comes, and then can he take any of this along? He cannot. All that he can take along is just his karmic fruits of his actions. So those he can take along to the next existence. Everything else has to be left behind, and this has been explained by the commentary as one has to leave behind immobile property, mobile property, or non-stationary property, and also one's skills, and the only thing that one can take along as described are our karmic results. Now, the last essence of the Dhamma is life in any world is incomplete, insatiate, the slave of craving. So we lack something and we crave for it. Once we have what we've craved for, we might want more of the same, or again something new, something different, something fascinating. So in other words, we're slaves of thought and craving. And Elder Ratapala explained to the king is, it's knowing this fourth as well as the other three essences of Fatna, the Dhamma, that he was deeply touched, and Satna then requested the going forth from the Buddha. And he did Satna practice the Buddha, and did Satna give him meditation instructions, and ultimately, based on a very strong motivation, this elder Ratapana became an arahant. So reflections on those four essences of the Dhamma, or a reflection on the greatness of the Buddha himself, might be yet another way of arousing energy to practice. Now, what else could we do to develop effort? We could avoid the company of lazy people. Instead, we could seek the company or associate with an energetic person. And then we might also directs our wise attention again and again towards the development of Fatna effort. These are, plus inclining the mind towards the development of effort, these are some of the factors that have been recommended by the commentators for the development or for the arising of the enlightenment factor of effort. Now, from a practical point of view, a meditator's certain point of view, there's a few things with regard to effort that really do need to be stated certainly clearly. A predominant object has arisen in our practice, let's say some bodily formation, a pain, and then what we need to do is we need to aim the mind at that satna object, aim it towards the center of the object, and this satna aiming needs to be then accompanied by the mental factor of effort, which satna then will propel the object towards satna the object. If the aiming is correct and the effort is also well balanced, then we will be hitting the target, so to speak. So hitting the observing and knowing mind will hit the center of the object of observation. If, however, our effort is in excess, it might, as the Venerable Sadhupanita points out, lead to an overshooting of the object. So rather than hitting the object of observation, our pain, the mind will go beyond it, and thus we can't observe it properly. In the case that our effort is a bit weak, it might happen that the observing and knowing mind falls short of the object. And so these two situations, try to keep in the back of your mind. Now, from more or less the beginning of the retreat onwards, the continuity of mindfulness has been stressed over and over again. Now, this continuity is not only important for mindfulness, but it's also equally important for effort. So that our effort is present not just for 5 minutes and then we take a break, but rather continuously, it needs to be continuously present, you know, during a sitting session. Then it needs to continue during one's following walking meditation, also the transition from sitting to walking, and then it needs to flow into the following sitting, and so on and so forth. Now, if that continuity of mind, of effort is present, then the resultant effort is going to be rather strong effort. Now, to give you a practical example in this certain case, namely, during the first few days of a retreat, for sleepiness to occur during the last satna sitting of the day is satna very common. Now, rather than giving into the sleepiness and ending up sleeping and satna snoring, one should nonetheless try to keep up one's satna effort even if one does doze off on occasion. So it certainly may then seem like fruitless satna effort, but that is not really the case, because you will still have made satna the effort to tackle the sleepiness. Whether successful or not, it doesn't matter. And if one keeps doing this, evening session after evening session, then overall one's effort is going to be, or is going to become rather strong, and then sooner or later will come an evening where one can sit satna through the session without satna dozing off. Now, effort is a mental state that requires balance. So we do need a balanced form of effort, and so, if an extreme form of effort occurs, so either excessive effort or deficient effort, then our practice will not suddenly unfold smoothly. Now, balanced effort will not be present right away at the very beginning of our retreat. We have to work for this. This is something that certainly we have to carefully keep an eye on, and certainly then something that will gradually develop over time by way of trial and error. And so the way this happens is that at times our effort will be excessive and we realize we get pretty restless. At other times we realize, the effort will be deficient. We fall asleep, we realize this is not working either. And then the mindset will make the necessary adjustments and gradually will get it right. Now, in terms of an excessive effort, the Buddha has certainly used an illustration for this, namely that of the strings of a lute or any other string instrument for this matter. So if a string or two is tuned or is too tight, and then number one, the instrument will not produce a very beautiful sound, and number two, the cord might easily snap. Same thing might happen in the meditation practice. On the other hand, if the strings of a string instrument are not properly tuned, then so it's rather lax or rather slack, then again the instrument will not give forth a proper tones. So what is required? Just the right tuning of both the instrument as well as our effort. Now, maybe as an almost last point for today, there is a close relationship between the amount of effort or the degree of effort that we put into our practice and the outcome of our practice. So if we're not really motivated and we exert or we put in only a low degree of effort, then we're likely, or the outcome will also be just a minor outcome. If we put in a moderate amount of effort, we're likely to receive a moderate outcome. If we apply ourselves wholeheartedly, we strive, and yet in a balanced manner, then maximum benefits can be expected, maximum outcome will be there. So it all depends on our selves, what we get out of the practice. Now, seasoned retreatants will know the importance of continuous effort, and therefore from the very beginning of a retreat until the very end, will ensure that this effort is continuous, and as a result of this, the outcome of their practice will be equally rewarding. Whereas a retreatant who is brand new to, or very new to the practice, and doesn't understand some of the intricate points as yet, might at first practice in a bit easygoing manner, and thus, the outcome will be accordingly. Now, to conclude with a Dhammapada verse, namely verse 112, better than 100 years in the life of a person who is idle and inactive is a day in the life of one who makes a zealous and strenuous effort. So, by way of a conclusion, a final or concluding wish, may we have many more days of zealous and strenuous as well, and I'm adding balanced effort, and may this ultimately lead us to the realization of the Dhamma. And this is it for tonight. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.